listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
When you drive in the left lane below the speed limit and will not move over so the sinners can speed by, just let us go. You want to drive grandma style and hold up traffic? Well, then do it in the center lane or the right-hand lane. But to force people to go around you, some of us actually have places to go. I mean, you might not have a care in the world, but some of us have places to go.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Work week, which is always dominated by the NFL. So I know there's the final week of the baseball season staring at us. We've also got some college football news that at some point we'll get to. Big games coming up in late September and October. As always, they get higher and higher stakes. The WNBA playoffs began over the weekend. The Indiana Fever in their first playoff game in years. Caitlin Clark, Kelsey Mitchell and company with a pretty rough one against the Connecticut Sun. So there's a lot of other stuff. That's the technical term for it. It's in there. There's a lot of other stuff that we can get to. But on this Sunday night show during NFL season, we want to get to every single game with a little emphasis on some of the ones that you chose as the bigger games. And we want to hear from you. When you think about the teams that are 3-0 with the Bills who could join on Monday night. There's a doubleheader on Monday night. Kind of. It's not really a doubleheader. The start is actually straddled, which is annoying in and of itself. But whatever. I don't make the schedule. They don't ask me. So I just talk about the games that I watch. But we're wanting to know from you, who is the most surprising 3-0 team? At Amy After Hours, or you can find it on my account at A Law Radio. And reading some of your answers, happy to share those also on our Facebook page, named after the show. One of those teams is the Pittsburgh Steelers. And if you consider that Russell Wilson was supposed to be the quarterback and has not taken a snap, not one, in this regular season, Justin Fields was never going to be the starting quarterback. Mike Tomlin was committed to Russ until he had the calf injury that could keep him out for, I don't know, the entire season, maybe? No, I'm being a little snarky, but it's crazy that he had the calf injury in training camp and then getting ready for the season, healthy, 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 healthy until about 10 minutes before they kicked off in game number one. And now all of a sudden it's a 3-week injury. How is that possible? But he's still not available, or the Steelers don't want him to be available. Instead, it's Justin Fields as their starter. So Chargers in Pittsburgh. And actually I heard this. I don't know if it's true, but I did hear it on the broadcast. Or actually, maybe I heard it on NFL Network. I didn't confirm it, so if it's wrong, it's not my fault. I'm giving you that caveat. This was the first game in the NFL season so far to start with four consecutive 3-and-outs. So it was a slow burn, if you will. The offense eventually heats up, and Justin Herbert dealing with the ankle and the foot that's giving him pain, he's the first one to find the end zone.
Herbert to throw, looking that way, lets it fly. Quinton wide open to the end zone. Touchdown, Chargers. His third touchdown in the last five quarters. And the Chargers strike first.
Quentin Johnston getting a lot of work from Justin Herbert early. Now remember, their entire receiving core has changed. And so Herbert's getting used to all new guys, as well as a new head coach and a new system with Jim Harbaugh. As for the Steelers, we know what they want to do. They want to be able to run the ball. They want to be able to control the ball, similar to what we talked about with Dan Campbell and the Lions, or the Baltimore Ravens in their same division. So they rattle off a 13-play, 7.5-minute drive, and Justin Fields was showing off the accuracy. On that drive, he goes 8 for 8 through the air, but also found some room to run.
3rd and 3. Steelers need to get to the 2 to pick up a first down. Freiermuth moves right to left. And now the fake, and Fields runs into the end zone off the left side. And the first rushing touchdown of the season for the Steelers. The first in Fields' Steelers career on the ground. And the Steelers have cut this to a 7-6 deficit.
Both the Chargers and the Steelers radio networks game. Pittsburgh then ties the game in the third quarter, right? So they get the Chargers get a field goal. Pittsburgh able to tie it with a field goal to start the third. And then there's this moment, which, gosh, it reminds me all the time when I see these types of plays. A, the tip drill, and why teams practice this, because you never know when you might get your hands on a ball. You're trying to get hands into passing lanes, but also when a ball is up in the air, man, you're trying to get it. And so the tip drills they practice, and Fields has this pass that's tipped for an interception. I think it got tipped 2-3 times before it's hauled down by Bud Dupree. So he throws that pick. But then there are a couple of more scoring drives. And again, I feel like we're seeing the potential for what Justin Fields can do in this offense. Okay. So I don't know about the Bears. Maybe it's their offense. Maybe it's the coaching. Maybe he just needed to grow up. Maybe he just needed to be with this staff, or even with Russell Wilson in the QB room. But he's starting to look a lot more like what people thought he could be when he came out of school.
Back to pass, throws over the middle of the field. It's Calvin Austin. He has a step. Austin heading straight up the middle of the field. Inside the 10, to the 5, touchdown. Calvin Austin, 55 yards from Fields to Austin.
It's not perfect, of course, but that 55-yard catch and run, his drive earlier where he was perfect, these are flashes and stretches where you can see that rhythm and where the question could be asked, why would they want to go back to Russell Wilson? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The Pittsburgh D, terrific late in the game, forcing a trio of three and outs. And so the Steelers were getting the ball back to their offense and doing what they could to run time off the clock. In fact, they run the final 5 minutes off the clock without giving the ball back to the Chargers. And as you can imagine, the fans there in Pittsburgh were loving it. So Fields goes 25 of 32 for 245 yards. He has a couple of touchdowns plus that tipped ball. And Pittsburgh with its first 3-0 start since 2020.
You know, the offense, we did a great job responding. And we knew what kind of game it was going to be. So, you know, just proud of the guys out there for, you know, responding like we did, especially after they scored that first touchdown, like you said, and going down and putting a drive together. So it was good.
Good to be 3-0 as we sit here. Obviously, we sustained some injuries and so forth prior to the game and in game. But that's ball in life as well. We spend less time worrying about the unfortunates that got hurt and like to spend our time focusing on those that get an opportunity to elevate and contribute.
Mike Tomlin, that's ball and life as well. I love it. I might have to use that. That's ball in life as well. Yeah, and we talked about this. No one's going to feel sorry for a team when it has injuries. You might feel badly for the guy who's dealing with a concussion, or the guy who's dealing with a torn ACL, or the guy who's dealing with another painful injury. But teams don't have time to feel sorry for other squads who've lost major pieces. Why? Because it's going to happen to them too. That's just how it goes. Injuries are a major part of the game, which is why you'll often hear that phrase, the war of attrition. Well, the Chargers are dealing with their fair share early in Jim Harbaugh's first season with them. They lost Joey Bosa at some point in the first half to a hip injury. I'm trying to think, there was someone else they were missing too, even before Justin. Oh, actually, it was after Justin Herbert. So we'll let you hear from Justin Herbert here momentarily. But one of the matchups that I talked about and a lot of people were focusing on late last week in this game, the rookie offensive lineman Joe Alt out of Notre Dame, right, against TJ Watt. And Alt had had a terrific start to his career, but this is different with TJ Watt. So they ended up having to double team him, and they were chipping him on most of the snaps just to try to give Joe some help. Well, Joe ended up leaving late in this game. If I remember correctly, his knee got wrapped underneath him, just a guy rolling over on the back of his leg. And so he got hurt as well. And so I'm nervous for him, hoping that was not a serious injury. And then the Justin Herbert. Now, he was dealing with the ankle, the foot. They were giving him pain. And after the game, he ended up having to leave in the third quarter. And Taylor Heinicke finished out this game. And Herbert, he says he's not exactly sure what happened, but he was in a walking boot when this game was done.
It had been getting sore up until that point, and then, you know, I think that play, you know, I can't really remember what exactly happened to it, but it must have got twisted up again. You know, kind of stood back up, realized that I couldn't really move too great off of it, got to the sideline and talked about that in the tent. My responsibility as a quarterback is to give everything that I can to this team, to my teammates, and, you know, I felt like I did that. I pushed myself, and I couldn't go anymore, and I had a tough time walking on it, moving on it, pushing off of it, and I knew that Taylor gave us a better shot to win, and that's why we believe in him to go out there, and that's why you have guys like that on your team. You know, I'm going to do everything I can to get back, get this thing healthy, and so we can keep rolling.
I appreciate Justin's passion and his desire to help and also understanding his limitations. The Pittsburgh defense had a lot to do with that. The pass rush was really impressive. 5 total sacks for the Steelers to go along with another 7 QB hits. And there were a couple of fumbles in there, though not lost by the Chargers. But yeah, the Steelers were making life difficult for the Chargers, especially there in the second half. And Taylor Heinicke, he only threw 2 passes. the Chargers were not over 70 yards rushing. J.K. Dobbins was limited in this one. Pittsburgh had a slow start running the ball, but able to implement that later in the game and control that tempo, control the ball. As I said, able to run out the final 5 minutes of the clock. And so the Steelers moved to 3-0, and I would say they've got to be a consideration for most surprising start because of the fact that they are using technically their backup QB for all 3 games, and that they'd had this back and forth, and these are brand new QBs. So it's interesting to hear your responses. Again, you can find us online at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page. In that division, the AFC North, now you've got this 3-0 team as well as the Ravens and Bengals play Monday night, so they've already had 2 losses. Ravens have 2 losses as well, though they did beat Dallas on Sunday. And that leaves us with the Cleveland Browns against the New York Giants. Now, I don't know if you're going to call this one a surprise. I think people are tepid at best on Deshaun Watson to start this season. And if you haven't paid attention, the Giants defense is fierce. They certainly can bring the pressure, and they're tough and they're physical. That's one part of their game that I think for the most part, you don't have to worry about, quote unquote. It's the offense that's had the issues. The offensive line, the ability to run the ball post Saquon Barkley, of course, but also Daniel Jones. Can he deliver it accurately? Can he work Malik Nabers, the rookie, into the game plan? Can he stop turning the ball over? Well, very first play of this game, no joke, the very first play, the Giants cough up the opening kick. And before you know it, the Browns are up 7-0. So Deshaun Watson gifted great field position. And on his very first snap, he finds Amari Cooper for a 25-yard touchdown. And just like that, the Browns are up 7-0. Now, at the time I said the Cleveland Browns is on Twix, couldn't ask for a better start. I did not realize that would be the high point of the game for Cleveland. So New York then settles in after getting punched in the mouth of their own accord. It's like saying, here, Rocky, here's my cheek. Go ahead. Or here's my jaw. I'm going to open it up for you. You take your best shot. And the Browns did. So New York was able to settle in late in that first quarter. And I love what they did. In order to find their rhythm, they kept the ball for nearly 8 minutes. It was a 13-play drive, and Devin Singletary caps it with a 1-yard rushing TD. In no hurry, not freaking out, which is good. You don't want your quarterback freaking out. And just mentioning Malik Nabers, the rookie wide receiver, The last couple of games, he's seen a lot more action. And so, yeah, for Daniel Jones to be able to develop a connection with Malik would be humongous for Brian Daboll in this offense.
Neighbors in motion to the left. Jones in a shotgun set. Singletary to his right. Jones back to throw. Looks, fires one left corner of the end zone. Neighbors makes a diving catch, but did he get his feet in? No signal yet. Yes, touchdown. In the back left corner of the end zone. Jones threw it high, and Neighbors went up and got it. The rookie's second touchdown in as many weeks. And with 1:44 to go in the half, the Giants have the lead.
Bob Papa on Giants radio. And after that Neighbors touchdown, Deshaun Watson finds some trouble. And again, this Giants defense is good for pressure, and they were working hard to get to the QB.
First and 10 from the 40. Watson back in, drops straight back in the pocket. Hit by Burns, sack, fumbles, Giants recover it. Brian Burns with the sack, and Elijah Chapman has recovered the fumble. With 1:32 seconds to go in the half. Neighbors to the left, Robinson, Johnson, and Slayton in a triangle in the right slot. Tracy to the right of Jones, now Robinson in motion left. First and goal at the 5, Jones back, looks, fires it into the end zone. Touchdown, Neighbors, on the skinny post. Jones looked left all the way. Snap back. Neighbors on the skinny post.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't expecting it to end there. Once again, Giants radio. I was listening. I was really into it. And then it was done. So those two Neighbors touchdowns are sandwiched around the Watson strip sack. And that was just part of how the Giants defense changed this game. 8 sacks of Deshaun Watson, 8 of them, and that's not it. They were also able to hit him 17 times. Are you kidding me? 8 sacks and 17 QB hits, not to mention a couple of takeaways. The Browns barely managed 200 yards of offense, and even though the Giants have almost nothing offensively in the second half, the pressure on Deshaun protects that lead. There's a fumble, there's a missed field goal, there's a handful of punts. I mean, Cleveland would start their drives. The drives where they started good field position, they were able to find some traction. So Amari ends up with another touchdown that kind of pulls them within striking distance. But the Giants, even though they didn't score, didn't do anything in the second half, that defense just allowed the Browns no room to breathe. So yeah, I was really impressed by what we saw with the Giants getting their first win of the year, but mostly just jaw-dropping with the defense and how often they were able to force the issue with Deshaun.
Yeah, we've been focusing on just, you know, focusing on ourselves one play at a time and just really dominating that play.
Every week they go in and they give everything they got. They work hard in the classroom. They work hard on the practice field. The coaches are together. There's chemistry. They work their tails off. And unfortunately, sometimes you don't get the results you want. So it's good to get the results for this. It's one game. There's a lot to clean up on. And we got a short week to do it against a great team.
Yeah, the NFC East is weird, too, because the Commanders play on Monday night, but you've got the Eagles at 2-1, and we'll talk about them against the Saints. You want just a game that it's one of those early season games that makes you want to poke out one of your eyes with a fork. The Eagles and Saints, that one goes to Philadelphia, so they're at 2-1. The Giants and the Cowboys are both at 1-2, and they play next week. Oh, actually, is it Thursday night?
Thursday night.
Oh, short work week for both the Cowboys and the Giants. So that's coming up on Thursday night football. As for the Cleveland Browns, I mean, this was certainly a tough one. They got booed at home in Cleveland.
To play like we did and not be able to put ourselves in position to play good enough to win. So I got to get it fixed. It's really disappointing on a bunch of different levels. I know we can be better.
I mean, they switch up the game plan. I think, you got to give their DC Shane a lot of credit of doing something different that we, you know, of course we were expecting, you know, pressure.
So, yeah, you can hear the frustration in the voice of both Kevin Stefanski and Deshaun Watson, who's giving credit to the Giants' defense and the fact that they were able to switch things up, the fact that they were able to – Shane Bowen is their DC – the fact that they were able to contain the Browns and to do so in a way that was so smothering. 17 quarterback hits, they were almost always getting a hand on him. So it was a rough day for the Browns faithful. They fall to 1-2. And it's amazing how different the same record can look on two different teams, right? The Giants are at 1-2, but this is the best game that Daniel Jones has played. He's not a huge talker, so I suppose that's why we don't have any great post game from him. But he sounds like Eli Manning. This was the best game that he's played so far. And the more that he's able to work with Malik Nabers, the better, because Nabers is dynamic, their first-round draft pick. As for the Browns, I mean, the booze might continue, both the booze, B-O-O-Z-E, and the B-O-O-S, from the Cleveland fans. Their defense has also got some pieces that are banged up. I know for them to not have Myles Garrett at full strength, thinking about getting an MRI this week is what the report is. Yeah, I'm always blown away by how things can change from year to year. But these guys will all tell you, coaches and players, every season is its own entity. And teams change, players change, guys are going through stuff, they're not the same. Even if the roster is exactly the same, you can't be guaranteed the same results. At A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, 855-212-4227. Who is the most surprising 3-0 team with the Bills still to come on Monday night? And also, you can take our poll for Monday MVP as we work our way into a manic Monday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Off of the hip of Carr, who takes the snap, looks to throw, does throw, looking for the end zone. He got a lob in to get both feet in.
Got one.
They say touchdown for now. Touchdown for now for Chris Olave. Got to wait and see, but boy, was he open on a little corner route.
I want to see the toe drag. Touchdown.
Holy smokes.
Touchdown.
That ball couldn't get there soon enough.
Touchdown. That's toe drag. That is perfect.
Hits, misses, and messes. Time to talk football after hours with Amy Lawrence.
Eagles and Saints in New Orleans. It was a mess. If you were looking for offense or if you had Derek Carr starting your fantasy league, oh, rut-row. Actually, I got a text from a family member. Should I start Dak Prescott or Derek Carr? And I'm thinking, the Eagles defense has been rough so far this season. I suggested Derek Carr. And as it turned out, because of the Cowboys' flurry of points and yards late against the Ravens, the numbers for Dak looked a lot better than what you might think, considering that it was a blowout at 28-6 in the second half. But for Derek Carr, there was not a whole lot of redemption, and it wasn't just him. The offense was really stymied by the Eagles. It was actually impressive considering that the Eagles hadn't done a whole lot defensively. But what happened against the Falcons on Monday night may be lighting a fire under their rear ends. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So the Saints unable to move the ball in the first half, even with a pair of Eagles turnovers. Jalen Hurts has an interception in the end zone, actually. Tyrann Mathieu picking him off also has a fumble after a sack. And so even though the Eagles are moving the ball, they're unable to capitalize on those drives. Meanwhile, the Saints are the complete opposite. They're under 100 yards in the first half at home against Philadelphia. So then it's the Eagles who are scraping and scratching and clawing and trying to get anything going in the second half. They have a fourth down stop. They have a blocked punt. And I kept thinking, uh-oh, are those early turnovers going to come back to bite them in the rear end? But after a fourth and one stuff by their defense, the Eagles get loose. And as much as there was a lot of people pointing fingers at Saquon Barkley last week. I tried to defend it and tell you the Eagles wouldn't be in contention for any wins right now if not for Saquon.
First and goal at the four. Game on the line. Motion. Give. Barkley up the middle. Touchdown! Eagles take the lead.
So the Eagles are able to use Saquon Barkley, also had a 65-yard run for a touchdown earlier in the game. Now, the play you heard with the Chris Olave touchdown on the Saints radio network, they're finally able to find some room, and you could see just glimpses there of what we saw from them in the first 2 weeks. The Saints took the lead with 2 minutes to go on this 50-yard drive and the Chris Olave touchdown, but there was no two-point conversion there. Now, so they're only up by 5 points then. And I love what we saw from the Eagles on the possession, all of it, not just the touchdown that you hear in the two-point conversion, but there was a 29-yard kickoff return by Ken Gainwell. So that was huge. Gainwell's able to get them great field position. Then Dallas Goedert hauls in a 61-yard catch and run. He makes the most of that ball from Jalen Hurts. And Saquon caps it with his second touchdown and the two-point conversion, which then gives them a three-point lead over the Saints. Of course, three-point lead shouldn't be a whole lot for a guy who can chuck and duck and who's got weapons around him.
Carr steps up, hit as he fires the football, and it is intercepted! It is intercepted by Reed Blankenship! It's intercepted by Reed Blankenship, and the Eagles are going to pull off the upset.
Oh, turn out the lights on the Saints.
On the Eagles radio network, I thought it was interesting that he used the word upset, because I don't know this early in the year where there's upset versus not. Maybe he's referring to the betting line, but just seems like teams are still trying to find their way. And there were a lot of people who weren't sure about the Saints and whether or not their offensive prowess would continue. But in this one, as I say, they're not able to generate a whole lot. Excuse me. They only end up with 219 total offensive yards. That Carr interception on the final try shuts it down. Philadelphia had great offense in this game, just a couple of turnovers that hurt them, but more than 450 yards offensively. A lot of guys that were able to find room to run, 172 rushing yards. So I was impressed with what we saw from their offense, but needed their defense to show up as well. Remember, because on Monday Night Football, they were up. They had the six-point lead over the Falcons late, but allowed Kirk Cousins to drive right down the field and score in, gosh, what was it, a minute? They're able to get that go-ahead touchdown to Drake London last Monday night. And so it felt like the Eagles maybe weren't going to be able to withstand another solid quarterback, veteran quarterback who can move the ball around, not to mention what Alvin Kamara had been doing and certainly what he'd done last week, although that was against the Cowboys. He did have 87 yards, so he was their leading rusher. But in this one, the defense was really impressive for Philly.
Last week was rough. Last week is something that our guys, you know, had to pick ourselves up off the mat, and every one of them did. And you get better from your work, and you get better from your experiences. And sometimes losing, you grow a little bit more from that. Not that you want to do it, but you grow a little bit more from that. And these guys got better this week.
The way they responded off of a tough game last week in a short week, I'm so excited for them. I'm so happy for them.
Jalen Hurts praising the defense, even though the offense had a lot of mileage as well. As for Derek Carr, he recognized the defense had the upper hand in this one.
I think they did a good job mixing up their fronts. You know, they had a lot of dudes on line scrimmage. You know, really, really sold out to try and stop the run, and they did a good job.
You know, I don't think we played, you know, obviously as well on offense as we had played the first 2 weeks. Give their defense credit. Defensively, we just gave up too many explosive plays.
So the Saints take their first major punch, or kick, if you will, to the gut How will they respond? And that's a lot of what this season is about too, right? It's about resiliency. It's about flushing a bad result and figuring out a way to move forward and to get better and to improve. It's a race to consistency. I mean, I don't know if either one of these teams will make the playoffs, but what I do know is that no team starts out the season ready to win a championship. It is a process, and it's a tough process, and it's a process that comes with a lot of black and blues and a lot of hits, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and proverbially, though, yes, obviously, literally, too. There's still so much to get to. So the Saints now take their first loss in the NFC South. They are 2-1. The Buccaneers were trying to remain perfect. So we'll talk Bucks and Broncos coming up next, as well as those Carolina Panthers who put Andy Dalton in as their starting QB. And oh, how different the results. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on Facebook, 855-212-4227. Here's our latest sports update. And here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
This report is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your home and auto. Save when you bundle. Get a quote at progressive.com. The Chiefs had a 5-point lead over the Falcons late in the fourth quarter, but the Falcons were driving.
The ball right now is in between the 12 and the 13. The marker is right at the 12. Fourth down and a half yard. Robinson and Algier in the game. Split backfield behind Cousins. Cousins goes under center. Cousins takes the snap. Hand off Robinson, sweeping left, and in the backfield, and he is stopped.
Ryan Ratke on Westwood 1. The Chiefs beat the Falcons 22-17. Patrick Mahomes threw for 217 yards, two touchdowns, and a pick. Elsewhere on the Week 3 scoreboard, Rams over the Niners 27-24 on Joshua Cardi's 37-yard field goal with 2 seconds to go. Other games, Ravens 28, Cowboys 25, Panthers 36, Raiders 22, Seahawks over the Dolphins 24-3, Lions 20, Cardinals 13, the Packers beat the Titans 30-14, Broncos 26, Bucks 7, Steelers double up the Chargers 20-10, Giants 21, Browns 15, the Colts over the Bears 21-16, Sam Darnold 4 touchdown passes, Vikings over the Texans 34-7, and Saquon Barkley rushed for 147 yards and 2 touchdowns. Eagles over the Saints 15-12. Baseball, Mets over the Phillies 2-1. The Red Sox sweep the Twins 8-1 and 9-3. Padres 4, White Sox 2. Dodgers beat the Rockies 6-5. Shohei Ohtani with his 53rd home run. Cardinals over the Guardians 2-1. Cubs 5, Nationals nothing. Rangers 6, Mariners 5. The Yankees beat the A's 7-4. Aaron Judge home run number 55. Giants beat the Royals 2-0. Brewers 10, Diamondbacks 9. Angels over the Astros 9-8. Rays 4, Blue Jays 3. The Pirates beat the Reds 2-0. The Reds fired manager David Bell. Tigers over the Orioles 4-3. The Braves over the Marlins 5-4. WNBA playoffs, Aces 78, Storm 67. The Lynx over the Mercury 102-95. Sun 93, Fever 69. The Liberty beat the Dream 83-69. I'm Peter Schwartz.
Hey, like us on Facebook. Our handle is INF Sportsnet. That's INF Sportsnet for our Facebook page. This is the Infinity Sports Network.
Play fake. Nick rolls to his right. Run it, Bo, to the 5.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
to the goal line. Touchdown, Denver! Well, you can see that, and we're on the far end of the field from where Bo Nix scored. But when he, with the ball fake, started to roll out, there was nobody there. It's a touchdown run of 3 yards.
McLaughlin, the tailback. Nix pitches it right. McLaughlin, oh, don't cut, don't stop. He didn't. He outran the pursuit. And Denver has a touchdown.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Dave Logan on the Broncos Radio Network. Strong start in Tampa on Sunday. In fact, 14 points in the first quarter around an interception of Baker Mayfield by Brandon Jones. So that put the Broncos right back in the red zone. Offense and defense working together. But a Javonte Williams fumble gives life to Tampa Bay. And they're able to go 32 yards. Bucky Irving. Get to know the name Bucky Irving, a 32-yard scamper to get into the red zone. And then Baker finding his familiar teammate, Chris Godwin, hauls in a 5-yard catch for a score. But Denver was still up 20-7 at the half and didn't have many points after the break. Only a pair of field goals. But like we've talked about a bunch this Sunday and this weekend, the defense was really stingy, protecting the lead. There was a forced fumble off of Cade Otton. There was a fourth down stop in the fourth quarter by the Broncos D. And the final numbers are pretty brutal for Tampa Bay. 7 sacks, another 9 hits on Baker Mayfield. Tampa just 3 of 11 on third down and barely managing 220 yards of offense. Denver is able to run the ball. They go 2 for 4 in the red zone. And a good start for Bo Nix. And while he didn't have flashy numbers, fact is they were able to cut down on the mistakes, not turn the ball over, which I think is huge, especially when we're talking about rookie quarterbacks. If you're even looking at, say, a situation like Caleb Williams, right, where he's got some incredible throws, some incredible moments, this awesome deep connection with Roma Dunze on Sunday, but then turns right around and throws this crazy pick in the end zone that makes no sense. Well, if Bo Nix can go week to week and limit the turnovers, you know you're already ahead as a rookie QB. And so I like the position Sean Payton is putting him in. And yeah, I mean, for them to be able to hand the Bucks their first loss, and to do it in Tampa, where you're talking about dealing with the heat, that's a big deal.
We didn't let it play a factor, but it was hot. And thought our guys did a good job of not letting it. They didn't wear it on their body. They didn't act tired. We did a great job of changing in and out, you know, personnels. And we just came out with a great, great mindset.
Credit the players. I thought we played well in the front, both sides of the ball. You get to these certain statistics, the pressure, the turnovers, and the rushing. And then the third down, and all of those kind of tipped in our favor.
So both Sean Payton, Bo Nix, kind of taking it for what it is. Not a perfect situation. And I can imagine the heat is a lot still, especially for some of these teams that aren't used to practicing in it or playing in it. And we're getting into late September. It's now officially fall. But still, there are a lot of places where it's real warm. As for the Buccaneers, yeah, and Todd Bowles and his defense, they played well, liked what we saw against the Lions, right, going on the road in Detroit. This one was at home, and they were really unable to overcome their mistakes.
Oh, there's a lot of things to be disappointed about. I mean, we can coach it better. We can play it better. We didn't move the ball on offense. We didn't stop them on defense well enough, and we didn't do anything special on special teams to make a difference. So it's a complete team collapse, a complete team loss. It's a long season. You know, we took it on the chin today. They beat us flat out. They outcoached us, they outplayed us. It's going to be a long season for us. We weren't extra high the Monday we came in after Detroit. We can't be extra low tomorrow once we watch the film on this game. We got to move on to the next one.
That is a veteran coach, right, that stays even keel for the most part, except for the one moment that we've ever seen Todd Bowles lose his mind. It's exciting! That was to start the season.
It's exciting!
but now we got to be serious. So the Saints and the Buccaneers both take their first losses. They are 2-1. Falcons lose on Sunday night to the Chiefs. We'll get back to that one. The Falcons are now 1-2. Carolina Panthers, are you kidding me? with Andy Dalton as the quarterback some new life. And here's what I saw with Dalton. For those of you who are Panthers fans, maybe you agree, maybe you don't agree. But I felt like with what Andy Dalton brings to the table, the veteran experience, the fact that there's so much that he's seen on a football field, he's not going to get flummoxed. In this particular game, I felt like he was relaxed and he was confident. And he brought stability to the Panthers where they've been missing it.
Dalton changing the play at the line. The snap. Raiders bring a twist. Screen pass. Right side Chuba. Gets a block. Has the five. Amtrak's into the end zone for a Carolina touchdown. Here's the snap. Pressure off the backside. Dalton floats one. End zone. Deontay Johnson. Back right corner. Hangs on. Touchdown Carolina. Here's the snap. Pocket holds. Andy throwing. Downfield. Thielen. Did he hang on? Touchdown!
When Dalton and Thielen played together last year, Thielen was one of his favorite targets. And I know Adam Thielen is not as involved as he has been in the past, but the Panthers can use that connection. Reminds me a little bit of, say, Aaron Rodgers and Alan Lazard. They've got familiarity, a little less with Dalton and Thielen, but both veterans and both in a position where they can make plays. So the Panthers put more points on the board on Sunday than any other team in week three so far. Meanwhile, the Raiders, they fall apart. This is the team that went on the road at Baltimore and was able to not only play some strong defense, limit what the Ravens were able to do with their run game, but also to be able to rally from a double-digit deficit twice in the second half, including in the fourth quarter. But in this one, they go just 4 of 14 on third and fourth down. At home, they've got 12 minutes fewer with the football. And Minshew, he wasn't terrible, just didn't have a great rhythm and did throw an interception. And so good for Andy Dalton, good for the Panthers in getting this big win and the monkey off their backs.
It felt great. Okay. Obviously, for me to get an opportunity to be out there and for it to go the way it did, couldn't have drawn it up any better.
Sunday's about the players and putting them in position to have success, and they took advantage of that in different ways, and it was just a great picture of Panthers football.
Dave Canales, first-time head coach, gets the victory, his first one, so congratulations to him and to the Panthers. And yeah, the Vegas Raiders were getting booed in Allegiant Stadium.
Guys got to take some rough coaching, because that just didn't see that coming on either side of the ball. We thought we had opportunity to run the ball, and We didn't do that at all. I mean, we tried and tried and tried, and just, yeah, I would have booed us too.
A lot of bad, not good enough all around, you know. Thought we came out a little flat today, you know, just didn't have the execution, the focus to sustain drives and stay on the field. And that was frustrating.
I don't know how that happens. You're week three in the NFL. How in the world does that happen? Yeah, it blows my mind. Not because I think the Raiders are some great team and are out to capture the AFC West, steal it from the Kansas City Chiefs, but after what they did at Baltimore, I was expecting a little more. I was expecting them to want to carry that forward, expecting them to be a team that could play with some pride, especially at home, and not getting in a space where, and you hear Gardner Minshew say it, not getting a space where they don't have the intensity and they don't have the focus. I guess for the Raiders, it's a work in progress because they're still building this Antonio Pierce culture, but he did have a good portion of last season to start to instill his philosophy and his approach. I just thought they would perform better. I don't believe in letdown games, not in the NFL when you play 17 of them, and when you understand what happens every weekend. But the way that we saw them last week against the Ravens, where Minshew was efficient, he was spreading the ball around, using Davante Adams, you know, that was the big touchdown late against Baltimore that tied the game. The defense forcing a three and out in Baltimore with a raucous crowd, right? Just the way that they were able to work in concert, I thought that would give them a boost. And as much as the Panthers were the joke and the butt of the NFL, I could see maybe a little bit of letting your guard down, but not to the tune of this, where a 36-year-old quarterback is able to move the ball at will, and you look like you're out there as traffic cones. And Antonio Pierce did not hold back postgame.
I don't think it was a team. I think there was definitely some individuals that made business decisions and will make business decisions going forward as well.
Now, when he refers to business decisions, there's a couple of different ways to look at it. Number one, he can be referring to guys who did not want to get hurt because of their paychecks, so they weren't putting themselves in positions to A, make tackles, or to B, block, or to take a hit. I mean, they were caring more about their own individual health and stats could be the other way to look at it, right? They're caring more about their own individual numbers than the good of the team. And all of that together means that you're not pulling in the same direction. And the Panthers take advantage, but good for Andy Dalton and good for Dave Canales. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.